Today's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by The Foreigner. Never push a good man too far. Jackie Chan and Pierce Brosnan star in the explosive action thriller, The Foreigner. From the director of Casino Royale, don't miss the film critics are calling sharp, exciting, and compelling. Own The Foreigner now on digital, on Blu-ray and DVD, January 9th.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, eats and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Dave Lozo of Ice Sports.
And I'm Greg Grushinski of ESPN. You're in Puck Soup. I did a video from the Winter Classic, like a keys to the game type thing.
What were the keys? Score more goals?
I think the keys was make sure you play Buffalo. But on the video, I did the Greg Grushinski ESPN thing. And of course, I took criticism for not doing it in the proper modulation as I do on the podcast.
Yeah, you gotta really sell it up.
Yeah.
And then say the letter.
Last night we were watching the news before this bomb cyclone hit the East Coast.
The bombogenesis?
Yes. Bomb cyclone is to you what when you heard that name for the first
time?
Ice
pop.
Ice pop? I will bite off
the
some
red, white, and blue one.
The red, white, and blue would be a bomb cyclone.
Yeah.
The would it be the shape of it? Would it be like an ice lollipop? Like an ice ball then if it's a bomb cyclone?
Well, oh, like sort of like it's like a bugle on a stick, and it's shaped
like it looks almost like
top.
A sex toy. Like,
whoa!
I mean, I don't know where you shop, but
I don't know what you're doing with your ice pops when you get them home, my friend.
Melting them, baby.
Apparently,
the first thing I'll bite off a joke that I heard on Twitter. The first thing I thought of was a Street Fighter character.
Bombo Cyclone.
Bomb Cyclone wins.
See, I heard it as Bombogenesis first, and I thought of Star Trek. Mm. I was like, because that's how they destroyed the Genesis with the Genesis machine. With
the Genesis machine?
A Bombo.
Uh-huh. That's right. Well,
fire the Bombo.
Actually, Dave,
Bombo number five.
Genesis machine was destroyed it didn't get destroyed. It worked. It went off. It was a Bombo.
Mm-hmm.
So Khan is on the ship, and he's just I
spit at thee.
And then the Enterprise gets away because Spock, spoiler warning, puts his hands on some dry ice and twists the thing. And then the Genesis machine explodes, and it populates. It creates life where there was no life.
That's great. Mm-hmm. That is a really good story.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And then like Spock and Kirk have that thing where they're like gonna kiss, but there's glass in the way, and he's like, Spock, I can't believe we can't kiss.
He's doing Shatner now.
And then Spock's like, Captain, it would be logical if we tongued each other before my demise.
Call 911. Yes, that is fantastic.
Bomb cyclone happened. Oh, we were talking about the news. So there was a woman on Channel 7 last night who stand. There's only three places that people really stand before a giant snowstorm.
Mm-hmm.
It is in front of a green screen telling us where the snow is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It is on the streets where the plows are starting to go, and the reporters either get hit with snow or with salt or some shit. It's like a Gallagher concert, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's always that reporter that they send to the giant igloos of salt and sand to tell us about the preparations for the night of assaulting the road with these elements. So there was a woman on Channel 7 last night who gave the greatest fucking pause to a news report I've ever heard, which is it was like, and that's when they'll begin dumping the 8 tons of salt and sand on these New York streets, and they'll find out in the morning if it was enough.
That's so is like a 1990s TV thing, like a TV person tick. That's how they talk.
Yeah.
Like it's like if you watch Vice, like Shane Smith, when he does a report, just talks like a normal human being.
Right.
But like when he does his voiceovers, he very much has a voice that goes up and down.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how people do things, I think, when they think about their voices.
Right.
And I can't figure out why that happens.
And it's infected everything because both of our ESPN impressions, as Ruby Edmondson has established the fact that I created it and then you picked up it.
Mm-hmm.
Involved that inflection, that for like pause for dramatic effect up and down sports thing.
Yeah, it was always a field report. It was always a split screen. It was Sal Palantonio still does it. Like every once in a while, he'll do a report from Philly because the Eagles are good, and he'll do a thing where they hope Nick Foles can do the job that Carson Wentz did earlier in the season. I'm Sal Palantonio. He does it. And like, there's no irony to
it.
And
when it comes to the quarterback position, the Vikings are certainly hoping that's the case.
We hope these foals don't get lost in the woods. I'm Sal Palantonio.
ESPN.
ESPN. It's I don't know. I don't know why they do it. I don't know how it happens.
It's a disease. The snow, we were going to have a guest today, by the way. It's a free skate with me and Lozo because our guest is in Brooklyn and couldn't come in because of this quasi-blizzard.
Like, it's like 5 inches of snow. You can't expect someone to get out of
the Informer. You know, say, oh, I was like, not, was it the 10? Hey, how many inches of snow was that album?
What?
The Snow album.
How many inches of it?
Hang on.
That was the name of the album was like Blank Inches of Snow.
Snow album. Yeah, you didn't know that?
I'm so mad about the guy.
12 inches of snow.
The weather guy who deleted his tweet. You saw that tweet yesterday from that weather guy. It said, update, colon.
Yes.
Like, why? I don't get why he deleted it. It was perfectly harmless.
Are you talking about the one where he was talking about the
get inches? Ready for a pounding.
Get ready for a pounding. Here comes 6 inches at you.
It's like, here comes, you know, here comes 8 inches, dash, dash, dash. That's too much for me. It was the perfect. First of all, I saw that tweet and I saw it on my phone and I couldn't enlarge it because I was on the subway. I thought it was like an 80-year-old man who did it. It was like a young dude. So like maybe he did kind of want to go double entendre, mm-hmm. but I read it as like a harmless weather tweet that just had the word inches in it.
It's a weird dynamic when, you know, it's that line you have to dance on where if you become self-aware of your double entendre, then you have to apologize for it. But if you're, you know, calling a Chargers game in the mid-1990s and you're like, and butt sticks it in the hole, then it's fine.
Oh, look at butts just running people over. You got the Chargers game plan. Butts first. Establish the run. And then it's...
Yeah, Humphrey snuck it in. You could see right here, butts is behind him. He's got butts behind him.
When you combine Humphreys and butts... You're always going to have a great game.
Running backs were better named in the 1990s. Again, this is a bit of old guy nostalgia, but show me one player in the National Football League today that's got a better name than Christian Okoye. There is none. And you could tell that it's been the law of diminishing returns, because who did they replace Christian Okoye with in Kansas City? Barry Word. I mean, for God's sakes, they couldn't even come up with a better name. They just left it as Word.
Barry, I don't know, Word? Yeah, but what's the word? Word.
What did you think of the Winter Classic? I was there, and I think this is going to be an interesting experiment in the does it matter if you're there versus watching it on television, because you watched it on television and thought?
That was terrible. The first 10 minutes were in shadows. The game was fine, but like it's just another game. I was watching college football. I was going back and forth. I saw the first two Ranger goals. Mm-hmm. And then I saw the winner in overtime. Like, I kind of was back and forth.
And I got to tell you, there's nothing like, and this might be the highlight of my hockey life as both a reporter and a fan, nothing like hearing the single worst goal song in all of sports sung by 43,000 people at Citi Field.
Oh, did the Bills, did the Sabres do the let me clear my throat?
Sir, I don't know if you knew this, but although the Sabres were the home team for the Winter Classic,
they didn't play their goal song?
They played both goal songs.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, yeah. I heard the Rangers goal song.
The Sabres should have their goal song played. They did play it.
Yeah, okay.
No, that's not the worst. The Rangers one's the worst. Fucking terrible.
The Rangers goal song is funny because it sounds good when there's like 20,000 people screaming it, but if you go to YouTube and just play it by yourself, you're just like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
But I think
it sounds like there are more people singing it than there are, because the song is sort of like sweetened. It's like when Def Leppard would do like the beginning of Pour Some Sugar on Me, and they echoed the voice. So it's like, sounds like an entire football stadium is like, oh, hey. It's like that for the Rangers song.
Yeah, it's not the best goal song. I completely forgot about that.
It sounds like the generic goals. Like, we couldn't get the rights to the Gary Glitter song, so let's write something for our hockey movie, and it sounds like that.
It's very 80s cheesy rock that somehow has lasted all this time. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh,
it's the worst.
Hey.
But, I mean, I did feel bad for this. Like, the Sabres fucking had to wait 10 years to get their, hey, thanks for holding the first one in your stadium just so you can get railed by Crosby, apology game. And then it's in Citi Field. They're technically the home team. They lose a home game, basically, because if the Rangers or the Knicks play a home game outside of MSG in New York, the MSG runs the risk of losing a $40 million tax exemption. So the Rangers have now played 3 outdoor games in New York, 2 at Yankee Stadium, 1 at Citi Field. They've been the road game in all 3.
You know what's funny is going to be like, if, I mean, the Sabres won't be there, but what if the Rangers make the playoffs by a point and they happen to play 42 home games and 40 road games. And
that's true.
2 points that they get in the Citi Field game makes
the difference. Yeah, and you know, if the Sabres, the fucking, like, there's nothing Buffalo. You'd expect there to be a giant bottle of Frank's or something, or Anchor Bar wing sauce in the outfield somewhere, just so you can have a little Buffalo in there. There's nothing. How about a giant cascading Niagara Falls out near the Apple or something? But instead, it's all New York all the time. Our friends in Western New York. How about like a mannequin lit on fire going through a fire table while wearing a Thurman Thomas jersey? Something that would tell us that Buffalo's in the game.
Well, that's the thing. They don't want you to know Buffalo's in the game. In case you haven't figured that out.
Based on the ratings, I don't even think Buffalo knew that Buffalo was in the game.
I love the excuse for the ratings in Buffalo was it was a Buffalo Bills hangover. That's what I read in the Buffalo News, was maybe it was because the Buffalo fans were all just exhausted from the playoff game.
It's a really good point, because when you're hungover, I mean, what you're doing is you're not watching television in bed.
No. Not a literal hangover. A sports hangover.
A sports hangover.
Where you just didn't want to watch any more sports the next day.
Yeah. Buffalo Bills fans got a taste of success. You're like, I can't wallow back in the mire of a losing franchise.
It's like, well, you know, LeSean McCoy is probably not going to play this, but I don't want to hear it. I am riding high. You know, Mike Tolbert's going to get like 30 carries. I'm so happy. You don't want to watch Jack Eichel and the Sabres come back and get a point? Nope.
The ratings sucked because of the Sabres, but also because no one gives a shit about two New York teams playing each other. And also because in order to get a casual fan to watch the Winter Classic, you got to have two of three things. You got to have an interesting venue, you have to have an interesting matchup, or you have to have a fuck ton of snow. And they didn't have any snow. No one gave a shit about the game. And what is Citi Field but like the ninth of a series of cookie cutter baseball stadiums that all popped up in the last 15 years?
You just can't admit that nobody wants to watch the Winter Classic anymore.
Oh my God.
You need to have all these specific things happen just to get the rating up to 1.8.
Are you a Winter Classic truther in the sense that you think that because of the stadium series and other shit that the novelty is gone and there's no reason to watch it anymore?
I think that's part of it. If it was once a year, I can see it being a more special event, you know, capital E event. I also think, too, if you're a casual fan and you're deciding between the two or three college football games that are going out at the same time, and you flip on NBC at 1:10 and the game hasn't started yet and the 1 o'clock football game has, and you put it on at 1:10 and you see Jeremy Roenick doing a zany bit, you're just like, I don't want to watch this. And then when the game finally starts, half the first period's played in darkness. You're probably not going to come back to it.
Jeremy Roenick did two bits on the pregame show. Or at least I saw two bits recorded, and I saw them online. I know one of them made the pregame show. One of them was that he went to Nathan's and did like a miniature hot dog eating contest.
Nathan's? Coney Island?
Yeah, Coney Island.
In Brooklyn?
That was, in Buffalo. So he did that. And again, I was actually talking to somebody about this yesterday, about you, how this entire like Buffalo playing a home game in New York, so all they do is show New York shit, is exactly the Rutgers thing. Is exactly when Rutgers plays a home game on national television,
right,
and they show a picture of the fucking Chrysler building.
They come back from commercial, it's like, Rutgers 17, Maryland 9. Oh, there's the Empire State Building that's not that far away. It's an hour drive. It's actually an hour drive.
Rutgers up 10-0 over Iowa. Beautiful shot of the Brooklyn Bridge here in Parsippany, New Jersey.
Here's some beautiful shots of the Coney Island boardwalk. And oh, look at the seagulls getting the french fries. That's just classic Rutgers.
Roenick did a fake Nathan's hot dog eating challenge, which is cute. Like, they sent him to one
Queens.
Of the hot chicken places in Nashville during the cup final, and he ate hot chicken, and like, it was like, brawooga, you know, steam came out of his ears.
Wait, so he didn't really eat the hot dogs?
No, he did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, he did the hot chicken too. But the second segment, the one that made the air, was him participating in the Polar Bear Club, running out into the ocean when it's freezing with the people that are like wearing their bathing suits
the
and shit.
Classic New York thing we all know.
But here's the amazing thing. I'm thinking they shot the Nathan's one first because he was the only person amongst the polar bears to wear a shirt into the water.
So you think they shot the hot dog one first?
Yeah, I'm thinking
I'm thinking
maybe after like 30 hot dogs, he's feeling a little self-conscious about life, and he decides to keep his shirt on going in the water.
A little hot dog blow.
Hey, listen, as a man of certain proportion,
hey, you're still like 20 push-ups. You're fine.
I'm all right. I can take my shirt off at the beach, just in the right company.
I just don't understand why jumping into the polar bear water with the polar bear people is like a New York thing. Like, there's like, think of all the New York things you could do.
Mm-hmm.
You could like, you can go to the Guggenheim, and I guess you can't bring a camera in the Guggenheim, so you probably can't do that. But like, there's like a million Central Park. You can go
I would pay
30 Rock.
Top dollar to see Jeremy Roenick go through MoMA. And that's your pregame show thing.
Like, he's just like, what's up with this picture? What's up with the side face of this Monet?
Looks like her boobs or forehead. Huh. Go figure.
This guy looks like Keith Jones with that haircut. Like, you know, just go through and do shtick. I don't know. But like, why is jumping in, like, how is that different than like playing a game in Boston or anywhere on the East Coast in the winter?
The ultimate irony is that the Polar Bear Club canceled their plunge because it was too cold on New Year's Day. So, like, it's clear that they did it days beforehand with, like, a group of, like, polar bear ringers, I guess. But the day of, they didn't do it. It was a big story. They couldn't do it because of the temperature.
Oh, well, that's fine. Like, I don't need to have the reality of the situation matter for me if it's, like, New Year's Eve or, like, December 29th.
NBC executives in the boardroom stressing, oh, man, they canceled the polar bear. People will know. It's pre-taped. I don't know.
We got to keep it under wraps. Okay, let's make sure we get all the proper angles and don't put any time stamps on this. Ready?
The shadows in the first period did make the game pretty unwatchable. I saw that on the monitors. And on the ice, too. Like, Shattenkirk told me that, like, when he was trying to he would look up to make a pass out of his own zone. The sun would be in his face. He literally couldn't tell what team he was passing to.
Yeah. It's like in baseball when you're pitching from the sunlight into the shadows.
Yeah.
Only it's like vice versa. You're the blind person at the plate.
I was born in the shadows. I can hit many home runs in that situation.
It was hard on the eyes too, because like the second goal that Kevin Hayes, like, I don't know if he banked it in or if he passed it, whatever it was, like, yeah. It all happened so quickly, and it was in the darkness, and like Robin Leonard wasn't moving, and you couldn't really see him, and you're just like, oh, that was actually a pretty nice goal.
Let me put a bow around this nonsense with two questions. Is the necessary evil of having the Winter Classic on New Year's Day and seeing the ratings decline for three consecutive years, although I imagine they're going to go up next year when it's Notre Dame, because you're going to have a pretty cool venue.
Yeah.
And
awesome venue of that big Notre Dame stadium.
Well, and someone was telling me that you can't even see Touchdown Jesus like from the field, so you know it's going to be like one of these things where every single ad break, it's just going to be a shot of Touchdown Jesus over and over again.
They're going to do like an offensive thing pregame with Jeremy Roenick as Jesus. That's going to get them in trouble.
It's JR as JC.
It's Slapshot Jesus outside the stadium. Jesus, how are you?
Jesus Christ, born in Nazareth to a mother and a father. It was immaculate conception.
Played his junior hockey in Nazareth under the guidance of God.
There were three wise men that came to the mansion that night. Doc and Eddie, one of them was a gift of the Magi. One of them was... I think it's not a usual place to, like, we've seen fucking hockey in a baseball stadium now. This is now hockey in a college football stadium. It's a different thing, and it's an iconic venue. But it's also going to get promoted, like, well, not at Notre Dame. I know what you're saying, the big house, yada, yada. Yeah. But that wasn't even like that. That was just like, get 100,000 people in a place to watch a football game.
See, my theory on why that game was like the last highly rated game was because that was the first outdoor game in like 2 years because of the lockout.
It was, but I mean, it was also...
I think that's big part of it.
The snow, the crowd, it was the Leafs and the Wings.
The snow, you don't know it's snowing if you're not watching it. You're either watching it and it's snowing, or you're not watching it and you don't know it's snowing.
I'd also proffer, I think that might be one of the last years that they did a like 24/7-esque show leading up to it that people actually gave a shit about.
Oh yeah,
because I remember I remember
still on HBO.
I remember the whole thing of like the wings were super boring. The only interesting thing was Babcock basically chronicling all the injuries they had for the leading up to the game.
On the show,
and then the Leafs were like kind of interesting. That was the one with the fucking
when Kessel and Bozak were like roommates.
And the Randy Carlyle toaster bit where he didn't know how to work the toaster.
Oh, I remember Phil Kessel just saying, good one, Randy. Good one. Like, that was a memorable 24/7. Yeah. And then they were like, we got to stop doing that.
You still had the hype in place. The game itself was compelling. The snow was there. The venue was incredible.
Toronto was a new team involved in it.
Yeah. So I think you're going to have that next year. So I think the ratings will go up. But, like, to the point being is this. Is it a necessary evil to have the Winter Classic if it means that we get a totality of outdoor games? Or should they dump the rest of the outdoor games and just have the Winter Classic?
Well, no, I think they're at a point now where they should just do as many as they – because they're all going to be the same ratings-wise, right? Like, bad ratings, but, like, the 14th most-watched game ever, bad ratings. But the 12th most – like, it's fine because overall, that's still more people watching. So if it doesn't matter, you know, saturation-wise, why not do 4 a year?
That's a really good point because, like, Whenever we talk about ratings in hockey in the U.S., like, it is fucking stunning how small the margins are. Like, let's put Buffalo in the game because Buffalo actually has people that want to watch hockey on television. Or like, the Winter Classic is the 12th highest rated NHL regular season game of all time because no one watches the NHL regular season.
Right.
And NBC corrected me. I originally, in my story, had it as the 12th highest rated regular season game on NBC in its history. It was of any network, ESPN, Fox, what have you. That was the 12th highest regular season game they've ever had.
There's more human beings on the planet now than there were 20 years ago. So you're
That's not how ratings work.
You're going to get more households watching the game.
So there's that. Now, the other question I had for you, to go back to a point you made earlier, which I think is interesting because it's something that came up in the World Junior game, which is, you know, are we at a point now where if the Rangers, you know, make the playoffs by a point – and they had an extra home game, or they, you know, someone was punished playing in a game outdoors, and maybe they're not as good playing outdoors. Like, are we past the point where that's a legitimate bitch, or is it still is it something where like you can actually kind of get upset about it?
I mean, but nobody would ever actually get upset about it because, as you know, let's say you cover a hockey game,
mm-hmm.
Red Wings lose 3-2 to the Blues, the game winning goal is Colton Parayko shooting the puck into his own net. After the game, what does the coach say? Well, we didn't lose the game on that play. We had a lot of opportunities before that to get the third goal before we got to overtime, so we don't really blame Colton.
Yeah.
So what are they going to do after 82 games? They're going to say, well, we had a lot of opportunities to get another point, two more points here or there. Can't blame it on the one extra home game.
Unless, of course, you're the Columbus Blue Jackets, in which case your coach will say, the NBC was trying to fix the game to make sure it goes to overtime. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted to screw us to make sure it goes to overtime.
Remember that? Oh, you remember what a dick he was back then?
He was like, the best.
Because I thought about it after I saw the end of the Rangers-Sabres game where they all shook hands. At the end of the Flyers game, everyone was standing around waiting to shake hands. And Tortorella was like, fuck off. No, we're not shaking hands.
Like, and it was, I remember it very distinctly. Like, somebody asked Lundqvist about the call, and he like made some mention of something or other, and then someone followed up with Tortorella about it, I think, or some such. And
The penalty shot?
Yeah, the penalty shot, and then Tortorella just goes off. Yeah, the NBC, it was a secret cabal between the NHL and...
But it was whoever it was covered the puck in the crease. Like, it wasn't like a...
It
was McDonough, right? Yeah. It wasn't like a weird sort of hooking call there. They were like, penalty shot. Like, you can't cover the puck in the... That's always going to be a penalty shot.
There's still a part of me that feels like it is unfair... And I know this is I'm getting ready to see the world's like I'm getting a fucking microscope to see the violin that's about to be across from me when I say this.
Oh God!
I do feel it's unfair to the Blackhawks to have to be in some of these outdoor games, and have to deal with these elements and all the hype and all the hoopla and stuff and other teams.
Why can't they say no?
Because they can't say no.
Sure they can.
Well, I don't. There has to be some devil's bargain that Rocky Wirtz made with the NHL. Like,
I mean, they have to have paid it off by now. This is the sixth one. Well, wait, where do you stand on having one game a year versus four games a year where you can work in some of the other cities that haven't had the games?
I honestly, truly believe.
What if every year we did Blackhawks blank in the Winter Classic and then there were three more games that involved six teams that could rotate in?
I love outdoor games. I really do like the Winter Classic. I think it's a special thing. I go back and forth. There's a part of me that likes keeping them to maybe like two or three a year because they do really become these centralized celebrations of hockey. When you're there for one of these things, the tailgating, the gear they sell, everything else,
The
gear they sell. I love the fucking gear.
The $45 t-shirts that say Winter Classic on them.
It's
getting back to the roots of hockey.
$649 varsity jackets that the coaches wore.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I would pay $645 for that, but I would probably – it's a good looking coat.
You're like a gear geek too. Like you kind of like get off on scene.
Oh, I'm not. I haven't bought a jersey or anything in forever, but that looks really good.
That's what I'm saying. Like I'm not saying that you're a gear geek in the sense you buy this shit. I'm saying that you're gear geek in the sense that you like what the jerseys look like. You're kind of curious about that.
I have thoughts, but I mean, like, no one cares what they are. I forget what they are 2 minutes. Like, the All-Star jerseys this year, like, everyone's like, these are awesome. And I'm like, these are from, like, 1995 Roller Hockey International. And then, like, whatever.
I love the Atlantic Division ones, the blue and yellow ones. Like, put that as the Seattle colors tomorrow.
I feel like if you like one of those four, you have to like them all. They're all the same ugly, you know, garish, like, old-timey 90s stuff.
Two of them look super generic. They look like you know, the uniforms that you – like, when a team turns heel – and they start wearing black or whatever. Like, that's the jersey they wear. There was one that's for, what was it? I think it's the Central that's like that. What was the one for the Pacific?
Oh, I
forget.
I
like purple.
Oh, I don't know what colors
point,
go with
who gives
divisions.
A shit? The one for the Atlantic that looks like the LA Rams hockey team is fucking killer. And I would wear that in a second.
Wait, let me ask you this though. So say you're a Devils fan, so you're a Metro guy, but okay. Like it's Metro versus Central in the final game.
Yeah.
And I'm wearing my Atlantic Division jersey in the arena.
How'd you do this?
Do I have to leave based on your rules for jersey wearing at that point? Because I was the rival of the Metro team.
Okay. And I'm gonna pause on this for a second because I want to finish my Winter Classic thought before you make me very angry. I go back and forth on whether or not I want the Stadium Series stuff and the Winter Classic to be like 3 a year to keep it special. Or just admit that it's maybe not special, blow it the fuck out and give everybody a different game. Like make there be 15 games, 16 when we get Seattle in the league. Like I don't know. Like I would be fine if every team played an outdoor game each year.
Right.
But I'm also fine though making it super special and it's an event when it happens. I could go either way and I'm not quite sure which is the better solution.
I think it's too late to do the 1 year thing at this point. Like once they came back from the lockout and did 6.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Now it's now like so. Like you just said, 3 would be special. Still, like that's still a lot of.
That's still a lot. Yeah,
still a lot of games. But I'm at this point because the Winter Classic is not the event that the national event they want it to be. If it's a niche thing where people show up and they pay the money for the tickets, you may as well just do a game in Dallas, do a game in Nashville, do a game in Tampa.
I still think we have some venues that we can hit that are special. Like I think an outdoor game in Nashville in the next 2 years will be great. I think Notre Dame's interesting. Obviously, that Beaver Stadium game between the Penguins and Flyers is something we've all talked about forever.
Like, Penguins Flyers at Beaver Stadium should be
Chicago and Detroit January at Lambeau would be fucking great. Like, there's a lot of games I think still could be played that we haven't done yet before I could say the whole thing's been tapped.
But like, I think with those games, they have to just be regionalized games. Like, you just can't have. Like you said, like it can't be like Detroit. I don't think Detroit, Nashville, and Lambeau would be great, but like Detroit, Chicago again.
I think it's interesting though, like. The thing that you kept on hearing this week about the outdoor games is,
well, it just goes to show you, if you show the same teams over and over again, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I challenge hockey fans. Mm-hmm. If the NHL gave you the Lightning and the Panthers in the Orange Bowl, I fucking challenge you to watch that game because you won't. You'll think it's great that it exists, but then the ratings will come in and it gets...
Well, the Panthers.
It gets outrated by Paw Patrol.
Oh God! Wait, don't light a match by that take because I wouldn't want the straw man Florida Panthers to catch fire there. Why would that be an outdoor game anybody would ever ask for?
No, I'm just saying that give
Tampa Nashville in the Orange Bowl.
Okay, fine. Give us new team. Okay, fine. Tampa Nashville.
Fuck the Panthers. Steven Stamkos.
Sure.
New blood.
Tampa Nashville. It's a great game in the vacuum in theory. What does it get? Does it rate? Do people give a shit? Or are they just happy that it exists and they're like, oh no, I was going to watch it, but Iowa and Bull Weevil State were in the Fucknut Bowl.
It's 4 years in a row. No one's watched the Winter Classic with the same teams always in it. And you're still stumping for the same teams.
Well, let me tell you this right now.
What if it was Edmonton, Pittsburgh, and Heinz Field? Do you think that game would rate better than Buffalo Rangers?
That is not the way to book the Winter Classic.
What do you mean?
I mean, building the Winter Classic around two players is not the way to do it because if one of the players is out of the game, then you have Leon Draisaitl and the Edmonton Oilers against...
Yeah. But I mean, like if you book a team like the Sabres that you think is going to be good and then they end up being one of the worst teams in the league, you still get burned that way too.
Jack Eichel.
By the way, I miss
Tim Murray.
Those commercials where they had like Shattenkirk and Eichel standing there like in front of the green screen and they were just like, the Winter Classic, it's fantastic. We're just some of the least enthusiastic things I've ever... Like we bust on Patrick Kane for always being in commercials when he has no charisma, but oh man, that was a bad
commercial.
Well, listen,
if we ever get around to having Tampa and Nashville at the Orange Bowl in the Winter Classic, I think you know exactly where you need to go to grab them ticks because they're going to sell quick.
I don't know.
Our friends at SeatGeek.
Oh, right.
Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated. Thankfully, there's a better way to buy. It's with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for last-minute ticket deals, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you get the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I could be anywhere with just a few taps. I can find seats. I definitely saw some SeatGeek customers floating around the Winter Classic having used their apps to find some ticks. $159 for the top of the upper deck, by the way, at Citi Field.
I hope the guy in the Flyers jersey bought his tickets with SeatGeek.
We'll get to that in a second. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, sports, concerts, comedy, theater. If you're headed to Broadway, if you want to go see, you know, Dear Evan Hansen or School of Rock or any of the other Broadway shows that are on Broadway that think are still here.
Maybe Broadway School of too? Rock, I didn't know that. There.
Get your ass at SeatGeek. Best of all, listeners to Puck Soup can get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app today. Enter the promo code SOUP, that spells soup. That's promo code SOUP for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek for geeks who want seats.
I didn't realize Broadway was a part of that.
It probably is.
That's informative.
I know where you're going with this, so let's just. I told people we'd talk about it. I'm not going to fucking make it the show. Because I know you'll try to make it the show,
you,
and I don't want to do it.
You were the one that was you spent 8 hours on Twitter on New Year's Day arguing with people about this.
I took a picture of a Flyers fan at the Winter Classic, at the New York Rangers versus Buffalo Sabres Winter Classic in New York.
First of all, strike one. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't just take pictures of people at events. I used to do that all the time, and then I started thinking about it. Like, you just put someone's face on the internet, that doesn't want it there. Like, cut his head off. From behind.
First of all.
That's the first thing.
The minute you enter a venue, you are consenting to have your image captured by either the media or the cameras. Mm. It's on the ticket, bud.
Yeah,
if I'm just taking a picture of some guy at a bar, let's say, you know, I saw a guy in a Flyers jersey at a bar and I took a picture of him, I might think twice about it. But at a game, it's fair game.
You're
consenting
guy,
for your image to be captured.
But if they cut to a guy in the stands and his team had a goal scored against them and he's like, ugh, all right. But if you're look at this asshole in this Flyers jersey, that's a little, you're by the way, that guy actually found you on Twitter. I
couldn't even tell if it was actually him or not. It might have been some other asshole in a Flyers jersey.
But all right, that's secondary.
So
that's,
what you're essentially saying is that by taking a picture of someone who is clearly dressed to elicit a reaction.
But you don't know that he's there. You're projecting that onto him.
See, I don't. We're getting way ahead of ourselves. I took a picture of a guy in a Flyers jersey at a Rangers game.
Everybody knows already.
I said, hey, there's one of these guys, you know, here's another one of these guys that just does this thing. And
he was just standing there. By the way, he was just standing there in the outfield in City Field where you just get food and beers.
Wearing his Flyers hat, his Flyers, looking like
a hot dog,
a traffic
sandwich.
Cone. Yeah. And then thus began an interesting day of mostly Flyers fans telling me that I'm completely wrong to try to tell a Flyers fan not to wear their jersey to a Rangers game in which the Flyers are not participating. And then the other third of the internet, because I would say the majority of the people were don't be the fashion police, the same ones who have clicked on jersey fouls for the last 10 years.
Yeah, you weren't ratioed at any point, but you were
yeah, no.
You were a couple miles outside of ratio.
You know, the same people who prejudge every All-Star jersey said don't be fashion police. But, you know, so about a third of the people were hey, you know, you're completely right. It's a fucking dick move to wear a Flyers jersey to a Rangers home game. Be it the Winter Classic, be it there's 42,000 Rangers fans there. Here's the very specific thing that I want to make clear.
Mm-hmm.
I am not telling you that you can't wear hockey gear to a game that doesn't involve your team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not telling you, Minnesota Wild fan, that if you are in Florida on vacation and the Lightning are playing the Dallas... Okay, wrong one. If the Lightning are playing the Los Angeles Kings... that you cannot wear your Zach Parise jersey to the game. Of course you can. Promote your team, celebrate your team. If you were a fan of the Carolina Hurricanes and you're in New York City seeing Dear Evan Hansen or School of Rock or any of the other Broadway shows you can get on SeatGeek.
Did you do a little Broadway over the holiday?
I didn't do anything in Broadway. These are really outside of Hamilton, those are the only two shows on there.
I'm Dear Evan Hansen and I'm here to say Alexander Hamilton's on his way. Sorry, go ahead. Didn't mean to interrupt.
I'm not throwing away my cast. That was a deep Broadway joke for all of you Broadway fans. I'm saying you can wear your Carolina Hurricanes jersey to a Rangers game if they're playing the Oilers or whatever. I'm not saying that. I'm saying this very specific thing. If you are the arch rival of a team and you are going to that team's game and the arch rival team is not participating in that game, you are just trying to be a dick.
Wait, that guy wasn't wearing an Islanders jersey?
The Flyers are much more of an arch rival to the Rangers than the Islanders. I don't know if you remember, but the Rangers and Flyers played in a Winter Classic while the Rangers and Islanders only played in a stadium series.
That is true.
But also, that goes for Islanders fans. That goes for Devils fans. I saw Devils fans wearing Devils gear to a Rangers-Sabres Winter Classic. That's fucking wrong.
Why? When do we get to the why?
I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you exactly why. One,
because the Rangers have like three rivals. Because
you're just looking to get her eyes out of people.
But what if you're there much in the same vein as the Minnesota person on vacation? You're just celebrating the Flyers
because there's a much different context. It's like wearing a Jill Stein shirt to the GOP convention.
No, it's not.
And you're like, oh, I just like politics. I mean, it's horseshit. You know exactly the context. No,
the analogy there is if you wore a Flyers jersey to a Rangers fan fest event, then you're kind of a dick.
It is. What the fuck do you think the Winter Classic is?
It's a hockey game between two teams.
It's a Rangers fan fest that happened to involve the Sabres as a home team.
So what if you go to the Tampa Bay fan fest in the Minnesota jersey in Florida?
That's fine. No one gives a shit.
Why
because
is that fine?
The Lightning fans don't give a shit about Minnesota. But if you are going to a Flyers fan fest in a Minnesota jersey, guess what? No one's going to care. They're going to be like, oh, this is so weird that there's a guy from Minnesota here in Philly at this bingo hall.
That's more
but
trolling
if you wear
than
a Sidney Crosby jersey to the Flyers fan fest, it is the same principle. And that is the point I'm trying to get across to all the Flyers fans. If you see a guy in a baby blue Penguins jersey at a Flyers game against the Sabres on a Monday, what are you just being like, wow, this is so cool. Somebody finally representing the Pittsburgh Penguins here at a Flyers game, even though the Penguins aren't even playing.
Man.
Let's give hugs, friend of hockey. No, you know exactly what that fucking person is doing. They're trying to make themselves the center of attention. They're trying to draw ire. They're trying to troll the Flyers fans that are there just to watch their fucking team try to get a point out of the Sabres. That's transparent. So where does it come from?
So much on that jersey.
Where does it come from?
Oh my God.
I'll tell you exactly where it comes from. And you know exactly what I'm going to say.
Uh-huh.
This is a very specific psychological place where this comes from. And this is why probably a lot of people couldn't relate to it. It comes from the place where I grew up in Jersey going to Devils games. And the Devils for a very long time were a shat upon team in this market. The Rangers shat on them. The Islanders shat on them. The media shat on them. They were a team that many people said shouldn't even fucking exist. And then I would go to a Devils game against, let's just say, the North Stars, to keep it Minnesota.
Sure.
On like a Tuesday night. And I'm there with my dad, and we're trying to have a good old time. And then there's some fucking guy in a Brian Leetch jersey sitting in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Ruining my whole time.
What did he do?
He just existed.
He just sat there.
He just existed.
And you sat there and seethed for 2.5 hours.
Because I know exactly what
he didn't even know you were there.
He's there to root against my team. He's there to show off his, you know, represent Rangers Nation or whatever, Rangers Town or whatever at a Devils game. And it's a very annoying thing.
I think Rangers Town wasn't founded till like 2012, actually.
And so I think that my point is that just be selective with it. I don't care if you're a Flyers fan. Don't wear your shit to a Rangers home game. You're just doing it to elicit reaction. You're just doing it to make up Rangers fans upset or fucking draw their ire towards you.
Man.
And I don't believe for one second this notion that the Flyers fan shows up to the Winter Classic and is like, I'm just trying to show off my colors and support hockey as a whole because it's just one big hockey family.
But you just told me that the Winter Classic was all about a celebration of hockey. And
if I go to a Team Canada inter-squad game,
here we go.
And I'm wearing a David Backes jersey from Team USA,
pile up the strong.
I am not there to be like, hockey is hockey's love.
No,
I'm there to piss off a bunch of Canadians, much like a Flyers fan is there to piss off a bunch of Ranger fans.
But,
but wearing a bunch of Flyers swag at the Winter Classic.
Let's say the guy in the Flyers jersey is there to do that, right? Like, okay, let's say I go to a Giants game and it's like Giants, it's a non-divisional game. It's like Giants Niners. And there's a dude wearing like an Eagles jersey. He's wearing like a Donovan McNabb number 5, a green jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it. Like, it's annoying for sure. But like, for me, it's on a scale of like 1 to 10 or like 1 to like 100, it's like a 7.
I dare say football is a different sport.
Oh my God. So it's hockey specific. If you grew up rooting for a team that was shit on in the 80s and 90s,
it's not hockey specific.
You
I think
project
it also,
all this on the people.
I think it also applies to John Hamm wearing a Cardinals hat to a Cubs World Series game. I think there are certain examples of rivalry that
So
where
in
this
Seinfeld,
is
when the Yankee security threw Elaine Benes out for wearing the Orioles hat, you were like, good.
Oh, no, because, I mean, who gives a shit about the Orioles? No, at that time, I guess the Orioles were the Yankees' main rival. But, yeah, no, I was like, good. Yeah, I completely. It's a different principle than not allowing a Blackhawks fan to attend the Nashville Blackhawks game because you're trying to bar them from the arena to keep the purity of the game. That's a different thing. The team is there. Like, you can wear shit to a Flyers-Penguins game if the Penguins are playing. It's fine. So, but don't wear your Penguins shit to a Flyers-Sabres game because you're just trying to be a dick. You just call it. You're just fucking an attention calling troll. It's bad enough we have to exist in this society where you've got YouTube vloggers strolling through suicide forests taking pictures of corpses. It's the same principle. Suicide forest, Logan Paul, Sidney Crosby jersey, Flyers Sabres game. I can't. It's an SAT comparison.
You're like Charlie Day with the Pepe Silvia. But just like all the strings like that are sliding over. So like if I wore like a Kings jersey to the Sabres Rangers game, that's fine.
Yes.
Even though the Kings beat the Rangers in the Stanley Cup final.
The Rangers fans don't give a shit about the Kings.
See, the thing is that you have to judge the fan on what they do at certain moments of the game. Like if there's a guy in a Flyers jersey, he's watching the game and the Sabres score and he's just kind of sitting there watching the game, that's just a guy in a Flyers jersey. But if the Sabres score and he turns around to his section and starts going,
"Nope,
yeah, yep. Eichel."
Now, what are the
then
chances?
That guy should get the shit kicked
what
out
are
of
the
him.
Chances of that happening?
What
of a Flyers fan doing that at a Rangers game?
I can't tell if you think it's good or bad.
No, I'm asking you. I'm not prejudging. I'm saying, what do you think the chances are that a Flyers fan, from Philadelphia,
I don't know,
born and raised on the playground, was where he spent most of his days.
I don't judge people by the color of their jersey. I judge them by the content of their douchiness after the other team scored.
I believe that you can, in fact, judge someone on the color of their jersey. And I say if there is even a 1% chance that a Flyers fan is going to get up and cheer for Jack Eichel, then we have to treat it as an absolute certainty and not allow them to wear that jersey to the game.
Master Bruce, even you got too old to do this. It's amazing. I couldn't believe how many consecutive tweets you sent that day fighting with people about this. I'm trying to picture like Pierre LeBrun doing this on Twitter, like as the ESPN senior editor, senior writer.
Hey, listen, it's a whole new ball game, my friend.
Man, so seriously, you're gonna wear a fucking Scott Stevens jersey next Wednesday to the Helium Comedy Club, aren't you? I feel like you've painted yourself in a corner now where you can't do it.
It's a different venue.
You're just gonna come in and like have like a T-shirt that has like a spray painted thing or like a what is it? What do they do with the screening?
Now I could think of is now the fucking Batman v Superman Rangers Flyers comparison, where he's less. You got your foot on the throat of a Flyers fan. He's just like,
Steve Bryan. What did you say? Why did you say that name?
Bryan Elliott's his goalie. And I throw my spear away and take off my Batman gear, and it's a Brian Leetch jersey underneath.
Who's the best Devils Flyers crossover players play for both teams?
Like ever?
Ever.
Oh, that's a good question because I don't even know if they've made a trade.
Yeah, is there one?
Yeah.
I was going to say, there's really no one you can call out that both Devils and Flyers fans would be like, oh,
I took
okay.
shit from somebody for wearing my Scott Stevens Devils jersey to a St. Louis meetup that I did.
Yeah,
but again, that's
going to the fan fest. That's the same. That's a problem.
Ah, but you see, you've fallen into a common trap in criticizing me, which is to believe that I am holier than thou when in fact I am a criminal.
Oh yeah,
who understands the behavior of criminals? I am a troll who understands the behavior of trolls. I am the hacker you hire to test your company's security systems because I know how to break the code.
So you're like Chris Hemsworth in Black Hat? Is that what you're telling me now?
Exactly. And then therefore you are the other guy in Black Hat.
I don't remember anyone else in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what happens in that movie. It might take place in
another
country.
Does he have his Aussie accent in that
movie?
No,
I think he goes American in that accent. Yeah.
I'm a master hacker. What?
Right.
I'm a master hacker.
.exe / activate. I don't know any computer terms.
This is a Unix system. I know it. Hey, dingo. My baby.
I believe my brother's not dead in there, Loki. .exe.
You sniveling quim of a hacker.
Quim. You should actually, seriously, for like ESPN.com, you should write a thing that breaks down all the jerseys you can't wear to each team's game so people know. This way people will know.
I can do that right now right here. Here's an easy test.
A Carolina home game, you can pretty much wear any jersey.
You can wear any jersey because there's anywhere. Not one jersey there that the majority of fans are going to treat as trolling.
So Minnesota Wild, what do you rule out there? Blackhawks? It's like Minnesota, LA.
Yeah, I would say a Blackhawks jersey.
Okay.
Don't wear a Blackhawks jersey to a Minnesota game.
So no Kings jerseys at Ducks games, no Ducks jerseys at Kings games.
Yeah. This is an extraordinarily simple concept that you're able to wrap your brain around.
I mean, no, this is an extraordinarily psychotic concept.
Don't wear your fucking Leafs jersey
around.
To a Habs game. Don't wear your Habs jersey to a Leafs game. Don't wear your fucking Flames jersey to an Oilers game. Don't wear an Oilers jersey to a Flames game.
See, much like Thomas Gibson in Criminal Minds, I can get inside your brain and figure out where the manic stuff exists, and I can see in your mind right now.
Well, and just like Ben Linus in Person of Interest, I have a computer that spits out logical things. Hence, don't wear an Oilers jersey to a Calgary Sabres game.
Oh, do you remember what you wore to the Bears bar when the Jets played the Bears this year?
Yeah, I do.
You do?
No,
don't
it
you?
Was it was last year. I wore a Jets Brandon Marshall jersey.
And Brandon Marshall used to be on what
the Bears. Mm-hmm. It was a new jersey that I had purchased for the explicit purpose of maybe wearing it to the Bears bar. But again, you keep on saying these things. A bar. A bar is a different venue than a professional sporting event.
Does that bar have a Bears flag flying outside of it on Sundays?
That,
yes or
that
no?
That bar has a Bears inflatable player outside.
See?
Yeah.
That's way worse than showing up to a Flyers, the Sabres-Rangers game with a Flyers jersey on. You explicitly going to a Bears bar in a Jets jersey, wearing the jersey of a guy who used to play for the Bears to root against the Bears. Check.
No.
And mate.
It's not check and mate.
Oh, it's...
I fully accept the fact that
you are the
I should have
guy.
Not cast the first stone because I am not free of sin. I am a sinner. I fall to my knees and say, I am that person who wears the jersey to the game to piss off people. But I recognize the error of my ways.
Oh, now it's all... Now it really is clicking in. Because of your own self-loathing, you assume everybody else doing that thing is exactly like you. And
that's not true
yourself.
At all. That's not my behavior at all. Also, I do support a constitutional amendment to ban people from buying food after 2 a.m. Pizza,
oh
Taco Bell, it goes right to your hips. It makes you fat. I'm just saying that if it's not available to me, I probably wouldn't buy it. So I support – I mean I don't project, mm-hmm. right? I'm just saying that having that as an amendment might be good for society.
True or false? Yeah? At the Jets Bears bar, when the Jets scored, did you start singing – I'm not here to cause no trouble. I'm just here to do the Browning-Nagel shuffle.
Do you know the story of the Bears bar and the Manning jersey? Or the Marshall jersey, rather?
Did you get your ass kicked?
No. Oh. So I didn't know this. So we go to this Bears bar, me and Ruby and our friend Charlotte and some other people that are Bears fans. It's a cool thing. We're in New York, and I don't know if this is true in every city, but like there literally is a bar dedicated to every NFL team.
Right? I once looked it up because I wanted to do a thing where I would go to every team bar the Patriots were playing and then root against the Patriots.
Yeah, but the Patriots have like 50 of them.
Right, and they go 14-2 every year.
So yeah, but there's like a Vikings bar. There's like a – yeah. Anyway, so we go to this Bears bar, and and so – I wear my Brandon Marshall jersey just to piss people off, and I get chosen to participate in a ritual. And the ritual is that they give you this three times the size it should be pitcher of beer.
Mm.
And they say,
I like it.
As a guy who has decided to wear this jersey to this bar, and this is typically something they would give to a Packers fan, you have to now drink the entirety of this pitcher.
Wow, this is terrible.
You have 5 minutes to do it. If you don't complete this, then you need to pay for it. If you do complete it, then you get it for free.
Wait, so to punish you, they give you a free giant pitcher of beer is what you're telling me?
It is obscenely large.
Is it two pitchers or is it like
– No, it's like maybe like – it's like a fish tank. Like it is one of these things where it is specifically made to – at some point have you go – and then the beer just kind of like –
You have to drink it out of the pitcher.
You have to drink it out of the pitcher.
That's hard.
It's a bit of a double dare challenge. So
– Okay.
But the other thing too is I've come to find out is you don't know where the beer came from. You don't know who prepared the beer. You don't know what's in the beer.
You think there's like pee?
It could be really anything. Yeah, you don't know it.
Wait,
I mean, I doubt.
You don't watch the guy on the tap pulling like.
I'm assuming it's the shittiest light beer they have. It is presented to you literally within seconds of you being selected for this challenge. So you don't know where it came from. Now, I would imagine being health codes what they are, it's not some guy, you know.
Stirring it with his dick.
Yeah, stirring it with his dick. So it tasted of sort of like ratchet Pabst. Almost.
Yeah.
And I choked the whole thing down. I didn't have to pay for it. I partially because I didn't want to like fuck up in front of Ruby and be like the guy who's like, I can't do it. Here's all the money.
She like reevaluates everything. Yeah. Like, oh man.
She's like, what a coward. He couldn't drink seven pitchers of beer in 5 minutes. It probably has cum in it.
Some like 6'4" handsome guy in an Aaron Rodgers jersey comes over and just pounds it in 4 seconds. Hey baby, what's up?
Yeah. So the punchline of the story though is I get done with this thing. And I'm feeling just tremendously shitty.
Like, oh, it's shitty. Oh, I thought you were going to be like, I was feeling, because it's 1 o'clock and you just had like six beers at once.
Well, I already had a couple. And like, I was sort of not feeling really good about the amount of alcohol that I had just imbibed in such a short period of time. It might have been less than five. It might have been like 3 minutes or some shit like that. I get done with it. I'm like, and I look over and there's a guy, they're a couple tables away in like a Jets lineman jersey. And he just looks at me and goes, man, that was me 20 minutes ago.
So to be clear, if you go to this Bears bar and wear the jersey of the team the Bears are playing, you basically get like two free pitchers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
But you don't know what the beer is and you don't know what it is.
I'm a gambler. Give me the free three pitchers.
All right. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the midway point of the NHL season and some superlative.
Superlatives.
Superlatives that we want to hand out. All right, be right back.
Hey, what is the deal with live comedy shows on a Wednesday? I mean, it's a Wednesday. Are they doing comedy? Is it hump day? I want to know.
How many people listening to this podcast are from Philly? Show of hands. Oh, look at that. Look at that. Yeah, that's great. That's great. So here's my thing about Philly. What's the deal with the Pennsylvania Turnpike? Am I right? Is it a pike? Is it a road? I don't know. No, but seriously, you're a great crowd.
And so the rabbi turns to the bartender and he says, Liberty Bell, I thought you said Bligity Blell.
I think the point here is that we have a show coming to Philly, a Puck Soup Live show on January 10th, 8 o'clock at Helium Comedy Club. Helium, it's a gas. On 2031 Samson Street in Philly. It's January 10th. It's 8 p.m., the usual fun and merriment. We will have Frank Saravelli, our good friend from TSN. You may know him as the stately gray-haired gentleman on Canadian television you occasionally see on an autoplay video.
The Silver Fox. The Silver Fox. The Pennsylvania...
Mm-hmm.
Pundit.
The Pennsylvania... Yes, the gray streak. The gray... Quaker. The... Anyways, so...
The not-Canadian guy on TSN.
Frank, air quotes, apple turnover Saravelli will be joining us talk about... it's just something they eat in Philly, because it's the Dutch country. You ever go to the terminal market with...
I've never associated Philly with anything like the cheesesteaks. Mm. Apple turnovers?
You really need to broaden your horizons.
I associate Philly with cheesesteaks and saying words like phone and home.
Well, that's just it. I think the selling point less than Frank Saravelli will be... Our amazement with the Philadelphia accent. You will see live WIP phone calls enacted in front of you.
Zach Bernardo needs to set the tone.
First time, long time, Glenn.
When we play at home.
What if we play Donovan instead of Randall? I don't know. This is a weird Twilight Zone in which both those quarterbacks are in Philly at the same time. The tickets are $18. You could head to philadelphia-heliumcomedy-com.
That's some website name.
But it's probably also accessible with philadelphia.heliumcomedy.com.
Do you feel like there's like a Philadelphia Helium company that got the first URL so the comedy club couldn't get the actual philadelphia-heliumcomedy-club.com? They had to put hyphens in there to get around it.
It's possible, but also it occurs to me that I don't think it's ever been established whether or not we have to do the entire show on Helium.
Oh, I was going to do it on Helium.
Pox!
Lithium. And apparently apple turnovers.
And aluminium, as our friends in the UK would say. All right, so tickets, $18. January 10th, 8 p.m. is the show. We'll be playing a live version of Schlem Code, Philadelphia-centric. We will play Does Sidney Crosby Like? Including, I imagine, a question for the ages, does Sidney Crosby like Philadelphia? And and so much more. Also live Q&A for the folks that are there. Fun, prizes, games, what have you. Go to philadelphia.heliumcomedy.com. for tickets. They are dwindling in number, so good luck to you in acquiring them, and we'll see you in Philly.
If we had done Schlem Code where it was just Guy Zach Ronaldo who has hurt from illegal hits, could Philadelphia people get him all, do you think?
Glenn, first time, long time. If Nick Foles plays better... I can't even finish it.
Nick all right. Foles is open. If Alshon Jeffrey is open... Foes needs to hit him in the chest so we can win the game at home.
See you in Philly. And we're back. A couple things real quick before we get to the midpoint superlative stuff. Freddie Anderson of the Toronto Maple Leafs was fined $2,000 of his $5 million base salary.
Poor guy.
The second diving violation. I only want to bring this up because, well, one, because it was kind of a bullshit. Did you see the play? Which one was it? His skates got kind of caught up with David Perron's as he was behind the net, and then he kind of stumbled into the net afterwards. It was one of these things where, like, when I think of a goalie embellishment, I'm definitely thinking of a bit more contact than that. And then mostly Chris Osgood is actually what I'm probably – or Mike Smith.
Henrik Lundqvist has been doing it a lot this year too. Anytime someone skates in front of his crease, his head snaps back. I think he, A, wants to draw a penalty, and B, wants to let the hair flow out a little bit because it's Henrik Lundqvist.
Sick flow.
But no, I didn't see the Freddie Anderson one.
Yeah, it was kind of a bullshit call. But like to me, the interesting thing about this fine, I look back at it. This is only the second goalie since 2014 when they redid the diving standards for supplemental discipline and started fining people and potentially fining the coach if there's like a billion infractions in the single year. It's only the second goalie that's been dinged by it. Michael Neuwirth, when he was with the Sabres, got fined $2,000 in February 2015. And so this is the only – think about how many times a goalie embellishes, and this is only the second time one of them has been fined under these standards.
And neither goaltender is Canadian who's ever been fined, huh? Interesting. No Canadians have ever been –
It is a bit interesting.
Mike Smith, never been fined for diving. Mike Smith. Well, look, here's the point of this segment is that we at Puck Soup are starting a GoFundMe to help Frederick Anderson pay for his fine because we feel like it's just too much for him to handle. So get the word out, GoFundMe.com/Freddie Anderson, and we'll help him pay the bills this week.
If you spend $300, you become a friend of Freddie. You get a free Freddie sticker, and then you can – or you can give $600, and then you become a Freddie – A defriender, and you get a Freddie Anderson Diving Club T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
If you pay the entire fine, $2,000, you get a kick in the nuts for spending $2,000 to try to pay the fine for a man making $5 million a season.
That's, he makes $5 million, but you got to factor in taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Toronto's an expensive city,
it certainly is.
Escrow. I don't know how escrow works, but I know that's a thing.
Well,
escrow.
David, glad you asked. Escrow is the greatest thing that ever happened ever because it gives us something I like to call, say it with me, kids, cost certainty. The second thing I wanted to talk about was Max Pacioretty. Max Pacioretty is in an interesting spot. One, he's had an absolutely terrible season.
Mm-hmm. Interesting is a nice way to put his spot.
He is currently smoldering in the tire fire that is the Montreal Canadiens. Trade rumors abound for a guy who has a year left on his contract after this season, in which case I think he's going to be about 30. two things about this. First of all, the trade destinations that have been mentioned, the potential for him to go to the St. Louis Blues as a last piece of the puzzle type player. There's been a talk of that being a fit. And then the other thing that came up this week, courtesy of Ray Ferraro, is a Max Pacioretty for the Nuge, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins trade proposal between the Edmonton Oilers and Montreal. Now, the first thing I'll say about this is I kind of treat any trade the Oilers would make like seeing my child play with a giant box of matches. I just slowly reach in, put the match back in the box, close the box, take it away from her, and then hide it. Because the Oilers making trades at this point would scare the shit out of me.
What does Nugent Hopkins have left on his deal? I know it's $6 million a year. Is he the same thing one more year?
No, I think it's a few more, but I think the other issue is that they're – I could double check actually. I think the issue is that he's younger.
Yeah, those were the parameters for Mark Bergeron. He wanted somebody that was younger and I'm assuming better.
Well, and a center, which is something obviously Montreal could probably use. And by that I mean an actual center and not a guy that they trade for that are like, maybe he's a center?
Could they have fucked up Alex Galchenyuk anymore? The Alex Galchenyuk stuff reminds me of the Josh Bailey stuff where, like, they just brought him along too quick and then, like, they soured on him and they moved him in the wing and they put him there, put him in the bottom six. And now Josh Bailey, obviously, he plays with – oh, yeah, I saw that was a thing, too, for you on Twitter where you didn't have Anders Lee on the Olympic team and you were like, well, he plays with John Tavares.
The Nuge is signed through 2021. Okay. I think Anders Lee is a fine player, but I just think that if you're talking about players that should be on the Olympic team, it should be not guys that have – played on John Tavares' wing for the last few years and racked all those goals.
And as the Americans, we don't want to Kunitz up our team here. We want We want to have just the best forwards out there.
But it's not even a Kunitz because we don't even have Crosby. Like Tavares is Canadian.
That is true. Yeah, he gets to play with him. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, like as opposed to, it would be like Kunitz without actually having the awesome player who made him awesome on his wing.
It's a bit much. And that's not, again, like anytime you get into this whole like building a USA roster. And by the way, for the Puck Soup listeners, I just fucking forgot about Willie Nylander, okay? I was going to put him as a reserve. It wasn't a snub. I wasn't going to have him on the team because I think that Brat, at the end of the day, will kill penalties for you and he's a...
You put Jesper Brat?
As a reserve, yeah.
You forgot. Yeah, I mean, still.
No. I forgot. I wasn't going to put him on the team. I just forgot to list him as a reserve. That was my thing.
Over Nylander?
Over Nylander, yeah. Hey, listen, you make some tough choices, but honestly, I was going to have him amongst the because I didn't have Louis Erickson, I didn't have Patrick Hornquist. I meant to put him with that group, and I just forgot to list his name. But he wasn't going to make the team anyway, so I guess it's all null and void to begin with.
Wait, where's Nylander is available for who? Canada?
Sweden.
Oh, I thought he was eligible because he was born in Canada.
Is he dual citizenship?
I thought. Maybe I'm... Hold on. Maybe
If that's the case, then obviously he's not on Team Sweden if he's a Canadian citizen.
Well, if people are yelling at you about it, they must know better than you. But I didn't realize he had Swedish eligibility. I thought he was like a...
Canadian kid?
Like a Couturier-type situation where he already made his bed.
Well, regardless. Well, maybe you're right. He wasn't on the team and who gives a shit. I mean, it's a fucking...
Who gives a shit? It's gone.
It's the greatest internet argument of all time where people get upset about a team that doesn't exist. and literally can't exist.
But enough about the Florida Panthers.
What were we talking about? Oh, Pacioretty. Yeah. Oh, no. I think the thing about Nugent Hopkins is this, and I think I might have mentioned this on the show before. Like, I really believe that he is Jordan Staal who can't win a faceoff. And you need him on a team if you want to win. I think he does a lot of really great little things right. He's never going to justify the cost. He's never going to justify the lofty draft status. I just think he's a real good player. And I understand that you need to make this move to get a Pacioretty because you've royally fucked your team on the wings with scoring by all these other dumbass trades you're going to make, including that Taylor Hall for Cody Ceci one when apparently they were going to make two.
So who are they? They're still assuming Leon Draisaitl is going to be his own center. But
he has to be.
Yeah, I mean, he has to be. But
he has to. He's being paid to be Malkin. If he's not, then they're fucked. But like
that was always the issue with that contract.
Yeah. So they don't need three centers. I just think that to win, it's great to have three centers. But I will say this. Maybe you aren't afforded that luxury anymore because you traded fucking Taylor Hall for a defenseman and Jordan Eberle for Strome. Like maybe you don't have that luxury anymore to have Nugent Hopkins because you completely royally fucked yourself with those other trades.
What does Mark Bergevin have to do to get fired, do you think? Like what exactly would he have to have? Like would he have to – like I picture like a Costanza situation where like he has to show up in like Guy Lafleur's old jersey from the Hall of Fame and like wipe like sauce all over it to maybe get himself fired.
I think that's pretty easy. I mean,
impossible.
I think all you have to do is give a huge contract extension to a bad coach. Wait, no, you did that. All you have to do is trade your best defenseman for
Claude's
a defenseman that's significantly
coach.
No, I'm talking about Therrien.
Oh.
I would not want anybody else to be in the foxhole with me.
I just want to get rid of P.K. Subban.
Yeah, you'd have to trade your amazing Norris Trophy winning defenseman for somebody who's significantly older and not as good. Oh, I did that. Mm-hmm. You'd have to probably trade your best blue chip top defensive prospect in a league where defensemen are a premium for a winger who you're going to make into a cent. I know you did that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what he has to do to get fired.
It's just, God. Like I wish I was a hockey player. Not so much so I could have played hockey, but just so I could have just been a 40-year-old, a 70-year-old man who could steal paychecks from a front office for the rest of my life. That's the best retirement plan of all time, man.
If we ever get around to making t-shirts, I want that on a t-shirt. Sometimes I wish I was a hockey player, but not to play hockey.
Just like fucking skate around the NHL for like 4 years in the 80s and then just steal paychecks in the front office for the rest of my life.
Speaking of Subban and Pacioretty, the other thing I wanted to say was this. Like, we went back, remember a few years ago when there was that big debate about who should be the captain of the Habs? Mm-hmm. And it was like we were Team Subban or you were Team Pacioretty. And most people were Team Pacioretty. I think the world was Team Subban.
Yeah.
And then he gets passed over for it. And now there's like all this talk of like, no one should be asked to shoulder the load of being a captain in Canada.
You know how hard it is for him to do this every day?
And all I could think of is like, do you understand that P.K. Subban would fucking tattoo the C on his face like the goddamn Canucks logo if he was the captain of the Habs? He would have handled this job better than anybody else in the room. Mm-hmm. The fact that he wasn't the captain and you gave it to lead by example eyebrows over there didn't make sense at the time and makes even less sense now, because now you've crushed his spirit as a player on top of all this stuff.
Just make Shea Weber the captain. Do a Dustin Brown Kopitar thing and just get him in a room.
It's the Chris Pronger Mike Richards thing. But Pronger never wore the C. He just was the captain.
Yeah. But I mean, like, if Max Pacioretty is tired of all the responsibility that comes with it, like, do a little Patrick Marleau, Joe Pavelski.
Hey, Mike, great news. We got a veteran in the room you can learn from. What? Chris Pronger. We traded for Chris Pronger. He's going to be here for a leader. I'm the captain. Yeah, but he's not the captain, you see. He's just a veteran to help you be a better captain. But we don't need one of those. I'm the captain. That's right, Jeff.
Am
I the captain? Yeah. I mean, like, last time I checked, you were definitely the captain, Mike.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to say it's a pleasure to be here in Philly. Just want to work with both of you, become a better, you know, leader.
Do any of you guys have wives? Just curious.
All right. So, oh boy. By the way, live show in Philly on January 10th.
I mean, if we're gonna do the cocaine bit about those two guys, and we're gonna make it seem like Chris Pronger was not rumored to be doing stuff as well.
Now listen,
that's unfair.
It had nothing to do with cocaine. It was definitely postnasal drip. Time for the midpoint superlatives. The National Hockey League and its teams are nearing the 41 game mark, which, of course, by my math, means we're halfway to the end of this miraculous season.
Almost there.
We have a few categories we wanted to present to you. I will leave all the awards for the writing that Dave and I will do on our respective websites. I'm sure you'll check out all that shit when it publishes.
Maybe.
Let's start off with one that actually is an award, now that I've given that preamble. Who's your midpoint Hart Trophy most valuable player type? Your guy?
This one was tough because...
It is tough. It's a very, very crowded field.
Because you have the whole Stamkos-Kucherov thing. What came first? The Stamkos or the Kucherov? The Kucherov or the Stamkos? Because Kucherov was pretty damn good last year.
First I ate the chicken, then I ate his egg. Right, yeah.
Oh.
There you go.
Oh.
What? I agree. Like, Kucherov's great. Stamkos is great, but Kucherov's been great for 2 years.
Kucherov was doing this before Stamkos got there.
Oh, like so a hipster player.
He was just like, yeah, I was scoring a bunch of key goals and having a lot of points way before you were ever here. I don't know if you haven't heard that yet. So, I don't know. I was thinking about maybe a goalie. Because of John Gibson.
Hey, there's an idea. How about Andrei Vasilevskiy, the real MVP of the Lightning that'll be passed over because those guys have been scoring so many points.
Really? He's been good.
He's been fucking... He's one of the few goalies in the... I think he might be, at this point, the only goalie in the league with a goals against under two. He's been great.
He's like top five in save percentage.
He's bailed their asses out.
He's in the Bobrovsky area. But I'm going Kucherov.
Okay. I think he's going to be top three if he finishes.
I know it's boring because he's first in
points. No. If he wins the points race, he's going to be top three.
Yeah.
Oh. My top three right now would be Kucherov for the reasons that we stated, that there's no way he's not going to be top three if he wins the point race. Although I don't think he's the MVP of his team. Andrei Kopitar, finally freed from the dour hands of Daryl Sutter. Found his smile again, made Dustin Brown into the Brett Hull of the LA Kings.
Finally free of the coach that won him two Stanley Cups.
Yep. Oh. Andrei Kopitar, I think, has been amazing this season. And if you look at like his point totals vis-a-vis the rest of the team, and then you also think about the heavy lifting he's had to do without Jeff Carter in the lineup for the entirety of the season, I think he's definitely been a Hart Trophy guy. But my guy, I hate to do this because I know it's going to seem like a quasi-homer pick because I used to live there and what have you, but it's Alex Ovechkin. If Ovechkin wins the Richard, he's going to be a Hart Trophy finalist. And if you look at this team, two things that I want to point out. One is that rare is the season in which Alex Ovechkin is playing so well, they put him with Nick Backstrom to get Backstrom going. Like, it's rarely that. It's usually the other way around. Two, Braden Holtby's not been that good.
He's been what?
It's been a very middling season for Braden Holtby. Ovechkin gave that team a kick in the ass when it needed it. He's going to score 50 goals. He is the emotional leader of that team. He is the spark that lights the resistance. He is a Putin supporter, which is kind of a shitty thing, but also one of the most exciting players in hockey, and he's my Hart Trophy pick for the midpoint of the season.
Wait, now I got to look up Braden Holtby's save percentage because I feel like you're just making that up.
By all means. But yeah, Gibson's a good, like Bobrovsky, I think, has fallen off a cliff. Gibson's an interesting choice. And the other thing, too, is that, like, I don't know about you, but my rule is that you got to be in the playoffs to win the Hart Trophy. And as we do the show today, Tavares isn't. But I think if he was, he'd be very, very close to my top three as well.
Yeah, Braden Holtby's a 917.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is kind of an
issue. Who does his homework here? Me.
Me, that's who. Ugh.
Okay, fine, you win.
Thank you.
I'm surprised you didn't go Taylor Hall. I thought you were going to go Taylor Hall on me or Corey Schneider on me. But.
Well, I mean, the MVP of the Devils is Brian Boyle. who is the player that you believe is not getting the recognition that he deserves at this point in the season?
Yeah, I don't know if I have an answer for this one because it's just, I don't know. Who's your guy? Tell me your guy.
Braden Point. 36 points.
Mike Babcock. 30, just...
36 Braden points.
Oh, my God.
In 39 games. He's playing with Palat and Tyler Johnson. And let's be honest here. I mean, you know, you can't be a one-line team. And Kucherov and Stamkos, obviously a dominant line together with that guy whose name I always assume his name is Stinkoff.
Name Stinkoff.
And so you need another great line. And so far, Point with the – let's call them the new triplets. Point with Palat and Johnson has been great. And 36 points in 39 games – with not having Kucherov or Stamkos on your line, it's pretty damn good.
See, like, it's just, it's weird year because of all the extra scoring and how certain guys are having big years. Like Josh Bailey's second in the league in scoring,
mm-hmm.
but, like, people don't shut up about that. So, yeah. Like, but is that just around here? Or
yeah, I think
nationally?
It's because we have a lot of Islander fans on our feeds. Like, it's gotten to the point where it's like, hey, you know what? I think the new head coach at Arizona State should be, oh, Josh Bailey. And it's like, oh, Jesus Christ.
I'll go Braden Schenn. That team is really good, and because that team is good, everyone's like, Alex Pietrangelo's got to win the Norris now. But,
yeah.
I mean, I think a big reason why is Braden Schenn's actually living up to the potential he had for like 100 years.
Yeah, the only caveat I give there is that his points have dropped since Schwartz went out of the lineup. But you could say that was a symbiotic thing, and you still say that Schenn had a good season.
Yeah, Braden Schenn. I mean, Nathan McKinnon's another good one, too.
Oh, yeah, he's been great.
But, like, he's fourth in scoring, so, like, how unheralded is he? So
he's not unheralded, but that's – I mean, he's, like, an interesting one for the Hart, too, where if Colorado ever climbed back into a playoff spot, like, that guy's a fucking Hart candidate if you ever saw one.
Yeah, I don't think I have to worry about that.
Most disappointing team this season.
The Sabres. I thought they can go to the playoffs.
Oh.
Like, it's one thing to be like, well, I think Calgary's going to go to the playoffs, and then they miss by 4 points. Like, All right, whatever. Like, the Sabres are done. They've been done since the beginning of December. They were supposed to be better. They got a new coach. They got the defense, and they got some play. And they're just fucking – they're a train wreck.
I think there's something to be said for the Oilers being the most disappointing team, but I would go Montreal. Like, I think Montreal not only being a disappointment in the standings and not only having a bad season from Carey Price after signing him to that contract, but, like, just being in a crisis of faith where, you know, Jeff Molson is eyeing the candy-like button on his desk ready to blow this whole damn thing up. I mean, to go from the Drouin trade to this is a humbling experience if you're Montreal.
What's Carey Price sitting at right now?
Like a 906, I think.
There's never been a more overrated player in the history of this league. I'm telling
Dan
you.
Than Carey Price?
Like, you go back and look at Carey Price's numbers year by year, and he's had some good seasons. Well, he's an MVP. But, like, he's had so many years where he's just been average or not that good.
Just think, they could have Yaroslav Halak and Carey Price could be sharing time with Thomas Grace on Long Island.
I mean, they could still have Mike Condon, who probably has a 906 in some league at this point, right?
Era Winter Classic hero from Massachusetts, Mike Condon.
Like, Carey Price is either not healthy, which I know isn't his fault, but, I mean, that's an issue, too. And he's, like, when he's on, it's one of those things, when he's on, Greg, best goalie in hockey. Mm-hmm. Well, he's been off more than he's been on.
I got to tell you, Dave, when he has every Canadian all-star in front of him in an international tournament, he is unstoppable. You can't beat him.
When he has a third pairing of Alex Pietrangelo and Jay Bouwmeester,
yeah,
and he faces 14 shots from Latvia, he is just a
hero. Oh, yeah. When your fourth-line center is Jonathan Toews, I mean, he plays extraordinarily well.
It just drives me nuts how whenever people mention the best goalies in hockey, like, they mention Jonathan Quick because he won two Stanley Cups. They mentioned Carey Price because, like, everyone just assumed he was going to be the best goalie, and he was for that year.
I had this discussion on the other podcast this week with Emily. Like, I think best goalie in hockey, dollars to donuts, is Bobrovsky. If I have to win a game, it's Quick.
Mm.
If I have to win one game, it's quick. All day, every day. Maybe Matt Murray is a possibility just because of what he's done in the playoffs. But, like, quick without question. But, like, best goalie in hockey, even though he's not played well lately, is Bobrovsky to me.
I would almost pick Braden Holtby, but he always shits his pants against the Penguins. That's a problem for me. I like my goalie's pants to be poop-free.
Well, Pierre, looks like we've got a bit of a stinky situation down at the Capitals bench.
Talking Eddie, Braden Holtby shit his pants again. He saw Malkin come down on a 2-on-1 with Kessel. He just dropped a load right in his pants. The whole crease is brown.
It's a lot of poop. A lot of poop when he plays the Penguins. One goalie. I might go Lundqvist. I might still go Lundqvist. I thought he was done after last year, but he's still living in the 920s.
We better put that situation in our game log.
Oh, God. Jesus.
Most disappointing player.
Oh, I hate to say it. I wanted to like pick someone.
I had to
more
say
obvious.
It. That's my Sting Lethal Weapon song from Lethal Weapon 3 or 4. I forget which one it was.
You're a lethal weapon.
I had to say it.
Oh, that's not from Lethal Weapon.
It's one of the Lethal Weapon movies. Yeah, it was him and like David Sanborn and somebody.
You're a lethal weapon.
It's probably me. lethal.
It's a weapon that's lethal. The lethal weapon. Yarmir Yager.
Yeah, he was a consideration for me too.
He had to be done at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like he's the age of 71. Yarmir Yager is no longer. And he's going to miss the playoffs too. Like, it'd be one thing if he was bad on a good team and maybe he gets scratched a couple times and he pops in and has like a little, butt assist or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, feels like the end of an era this year, my friend. His butt's a lethal weapon.
Most disappointing player injury division is Martin Hansel. Big free agent contract, three goals, three assists in 26 games, but he's been banged up the whole time.
That's probably what he might have had that anyway if he was healthy. Let's be honest.
He's really tall. By the way, he plays for the Dallas Stars, in case you forgot. Also, Cam Talbot is my most disappointing player. Because not only has Cam Talbot been extraordinarily mediocre this season, but Cam Talbot also ends up being the thread of the sweater that you pull to unravel the whole fucking thing, where now the Oilers are a mediocre team because they're not getting the goaltending he had last year.
Yeah, he was awesome last year.
Yeah. So I think he's most disappointing because, he's the reason they're not very good. On top of other things, but
Matt Murray's been disappointing too.
He's been
injured too. But
they're all very tired.
Yeah,
Penguins.
It's funny how like they're gonna stop being tired once Chris Letang plays for two straight months and they're suddenly second in the division.
They're gonna stop being tired on like April 15th, and then all of a sudden they're just gonna start rolling. They're gonna play the Capitals in the first round and sweep them, and it's like, oh, the Penguins are back.
There's nothing I want more than the Penguins to make the playoffs on the last day and then get the Caps in the first round because of that.
It completely could happen.
Talk about pooping in your pants.
Give me Caps, Penguins, and Devils, Rangers in the first round. Oofah.
Yeah, a lot of jerseys you can't wear to those games, according to Greg Wyshynski.
That's right. Don't go wearing their Flyers jerseys to either of those games, Flyers guy.
What if I go to a Kings game?
I'm just supporting hockey going to a Devils, Rangers game in my Flyers jersey. I love hockey. Not the Flyers.
How about if I go to a Kings Vegas game in a Jared Stoll jersey with Coke under my nose?
Well, then you're supporting both teams.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
The anti-troll.
Yeah, it's the anti-troll. That's right. The anti-troll equation, as it were.
I go there in a Jared Stoll jersey and like those bathing shorts where you can stick the drugs in your pockets and just be like, go everybody.
If you go to a Dallas Stars game in a North Stars Modano jersey, that's also anti-troll, I think.
What if they're playing the Wild? No one knows what your intentions are. Boy, your head just exploded.
Yeah, I can't.
I finally found the one little crack to get through.
I'm going to have to meditate on this one. Who is the team that all of a sudden you realize could probably win the Stanley Cup that you didn't previously realize could probably win the Stanley Cup?
It's still nobody. It's Tampa or it's Pittsburgh. Either one of those.
You don't think anybody in the West can win the Cup?
Nope.
Not Nashville?
The West is bad.
Kyle Turris?
Maybe Nashville. But like I just
Flower, what's your opinion of Kyle Turris?
But like going into the year, I would say like Nashville, the Penguins, and Tampa were my three teams, and I don't feel like any other team still has a chance to do it. Like Vegas, look, I love you. I love the Vegas. Love the Vegas. The Caps, they're a worse team than they were last year. The Devils, no. Well, it's the Rangers, no. The rest of the Atlantic stinks. The Pacific's only, garbage. L.A.? No.
Literally the only question I have about Vegas right now is who collects the cup when Gary asks them to come over and get it because they don't have a captain. Would be Fleury, you think?
Who gets the cup first?
Yeah.
Like, no,
you're right. Who's the, who's, no, who gets the cup second?
That's what I mean.
Who's the emotional guy that we've, you know, waiting to get their cup for all this time? I don't know who it would be.
Shipachov? That guy?
The Russian who's no longer on the team?
How great would that be? They fly him back in.
Oh, it would be James Neal. Leaving a cup finalist to come to Vegas and then and putting on his big boy pants and being a leader.
Who's the oldest guy on the team? Is it James Neal?
It might be Fleury, right? Fleury's older than Neal, isn't he?
Yeah, he got drafted in 03.
How old's Engelund? It might be him.
I think
it would be Engelund to get the cup. He's a Vegas. He's Captain Vegas. He talked to the crowd.
Yeah, if you talk to the crowd after a shooting, you're going to be the guy that gets the cup.
Yeah,
you got to
be the guy that gets the cup.
But who would he pass it to next?
Bill Foley.
Nate Schmidt.
Bill Foley shuffling onto the ice in his loafers. Come on, boys. $500 million.
They give it to one of the medieval times knights. From, skate around.
From the fucking Excalibur. That'd be amazing. Just keep passing the cup to different people. Hey, Carrot Top from Mandalay Bay. And
Oh, no. They bring the cup out in the rock and they pull it out like it's Excalibur. Dun, 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 dun.
As you can see, Doc and Eddie, the cup has gone from Carrot Top to Chris Angel to Marie Osmond.
The Golden Knights are on top. Carrot Top. I'm Doc Emmerich, ESPN, apparently.
The greatest tradition in all of hockey, as you see Penn passing it to Teller, and Teller passing it to the Tiger from the old Siegfried and Roy show.
Oh, and here comes Lady Gaga. Oh, and she's giving it to Timberlake next. Oh, that is just so wonderful.
And she's and here it goes now to all of the Backstreet Boys. Nick Carter passing it to AJ. Now on to Kevin. And now it's gone to that weird Pokemon lizard mascot they have.
Seriously, I forgot about that.
My answer, by the way, is the LA Kings. Like, I'm kind of a believer right now in the Kings, the way they play with Quick, with the fact they've done it all without Jeff Carter. I think this is a really dangerous team. And I think, and again, part of this is a wish that your heart makes, where as a guy who wants there to be the dynasty debate, the fake dynasty debate between the Blackhawks and Kings. If the Kings get their third, now we actually have a...
What dynasty?
Yeah.
They haven't won a playoff run in like 3 years.
But they would have three cups in the span of like 9 or 10 years.
Oh, you think the Devils are a dynasty?
Oh, the Devils are clearly a dynasty.
Oh, God.
Four cup appearances, three Stanley Cups within a span of...
Appearances. See, once you throw the word appearances in there, you're defaulting to the fact that they're not.
Appearances are amazing. Like when you watch a special on TV and it's like appearances by Jay Leno. Like, you're like, oh, this is so exciting. I didn't realize Jay Leno would be on this.
So what do you think about the Buffalo Bills late 90s football dynasty?
They never won.
They appeared, though, four straight.
But that's you get a participation ribbon then, but you don't win anything. The Devils won three cups. Kings would have won three cups.
What about the Cleveland Cavaliers dynasty? One championship, three appearances. Three straight.
Yeah, but don't they also get a piece of the ones the Heat won, too? Like, don't they get, like a third... credit.
It's dynasty watering down. You know, here's the thing about millennials ruining everything is they've ruined dynasties. I don't know how. I'll figure that one out next week, I think.
You know, it's a dynasty. How many Sundays in a row I've had avocado toast and bottomless bloodies, turkey sausage.
Was our guest this week going to be a millennial? Is he a millennial?
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't.
He's going to be on soon, though. So I'm not.
I was just millennials may not like 4 inches of snow. I wasn't sure if that.
Ugh.
Was people on Twitter were complaining. About
I can't that. Even wear my Uggs.
My office is not closed today.
What do you mean you can't pick up my laundry?
Oh my God, seamless is like an hour and 45 minute wait today.
I agree. Somebody said the biggest. And I say this here at the studio, so hopefully nobody outside these glass can hear me because the studio is open today inexplicably. The biggest assholes in the world are the businesses that are open today. The second biggest assholes in the world, the people ordering Seamless today.
No, the third biggest assholes are people that go on Twitter and do the performative tweets of, if you get something delivered today, you better tip your delivery person like a lot of money.
Yeah.
As if the rest of society does not understand how tipping works in bad weather.
Right.
Like, you're the hero on Twitter pointing out that, oh my God, It's like they look outside and see it's snowing, and it's always the same people. Yeah, if you get Seamless today, you better really, really take care of your delivery. Yeah, I fucking know.
Yeah, not Christmas.
I know. And also snowing. The day before, Twitter is entirely photos of like empty grocery shelves. People plan ahead.
I'll say this about the people delivering on a snowy day for like Seamless, like. Kind of what they signed up for. Isn't it like the post office? Like, nope. You don't give a fucking, you don't give your postal worker like a $50 bill when it's snowing. It's part of the oath. You know, I figure if you sign up for Seamless, you're like, I will ride my bike through darkest days and blackest nights and snowy days and rainy nights.
Well, I go back and forth because if the business is open and you're just sitting there and not getting any orders because everyone's being noble and not getting Seamless. Mm-hmm. Like, that's bad for the person whose job it is,
also,
isn't it?
Yeah, Seamlesses are the heroes. Like, these businesses wouldn't have anybody in their establishments because there's 4 inches of snow on the ground. Were it not for the Seamless people, they'd probably suffer financial calamity.
I think if the weather's – if it's like a foot of snow, then maybe, like, shut it down. But, like, today in New York, it's 4 to 8. Mm-hmm. Like, you could probably order food if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. And just tip give the man or the woman the nice tip. That's it. I don't need 18 tweets in my timeline about how, oh, man, if you order Seamless, you better make sure to take care of your – I know how it works.
It's a great point, and you can feel really good about yourself until you open your bag and they didn't give you that zesty sauce for your onion rings, and you're like, fuck you, Seamless.
No, here's the thing, though, is like I always order in the snow, and I had not realized I should tip more in that situation. I had been beating the shit out of my delivery guy when he gets there. I'm like, you stupid idiot. I hate you. And then I push him down the stairs. But then I saw Jeff's tweet, and I was like, oh, right, I should tip
him. You pushed him down the stairs. He fell into the snow. He made a little angel with his lifeless body, and you're like, I see the error of my ways.
I was like holding his face down in the snow and dumping my soda on his head, and then I checked Twitter, and I was like, oh, I should tip him more. That's what I should have done. Fuck this website, man.
All right, before we go, it's time for the question of the week. The question of the week, of course, being... you asked it, so what was it? It was about the
question
All-Star
of the week
game?
Was because since Hockey Ops picks the rest of the All-Star team after fans pick four guys, I wanted to know what the fans thought about it. I want to know what their favorite part was of having Colin Campbell pick the All-Star team. And there's some
a lot of grit, and sandpaper, my friends.
Adrian Messini, Abs Messini. I wonder if he works for the Abs. He says it feels like going to a restaurant you don't really like and having the waiter order your food for you.
Glenn Russell says the fact that they rigged it, the process, so Crosby wouldn't have to think up a new excuse to skip the game. Yeah, he's not an all-star captain, by the way. One assumes that maybe he'll be in the game. Maybe his stats aren't good enough to be in the game.
Yeah, like he's only like top 30 in scoring or something this year. So maybe he can actually get out of the game. What do you think about the idea that they're going to boycott? Like that's never going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
It's never going to happen.
Yeah, I think a lot of these guys have come to grips with the idea that this Olympic thing is just whatever. And honestly, like if you really wanted to hit the NHL where it hurts, don't boycott the fucking all-star game. Boycott the next international event that they do.
Yeah, but they won't.
But yeah, because they get revenue from it.
Right.
Like they made a good amount of coin off that World Cup game.
And there's no like if you wanted to do something, you should have boycotted the last All Star game as opposed to boycotting the All Star game after they've already decided they're not going to the Olympics and they just picked the Olympic team.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever. Casual Friday says, I love that we can be 100% sure to exclude non-top 100 players such as Evgeny Malkin.
Alex says, any chance cap-strapped teams look to the Olympics for zero-loss add-ons for a cup run? This, I guess, was just a random question about the – not related to the All-Star game.
What was the question?
If they're going to look to the Olympics for players that play in the Olympics for add-ons for a cup run, yeah, absolutely. Like, I think Gianta's going to get a contract after the Olympics.
No.
We didn't really talk about that at all. I guess we'll talk about that in another episode. But
Gianta.
Matt says, I can spend more time not caring about the All-Star game because they took the fun out of it. Nice neon unis, though. Yeah, the fan voting was always a really fun thing. And I say that as a guy who obviously did the thing with the John Scott bit. But like also just like going to the game and poking out the little circles on the sheets were always
right.
A lot of fun. Yeah.
I also just miss seeing the vote totals. I like knowing how many votes a guy got.
Sorry.
What?
That's me. I did that.
Oh, because of your John Scott love? But like I don't understand.
But also the Roy Fitzpatrick thing. And
yeah, but they kept showing the vote totals after Roy Fitzpatrick. That was the time to stop doing it because they obviously, you know, invented voter fraud. Wait, my Trump is my Francesa, apparently. Valkyrie Liz says, the NHL, trust us, we know your favorites. Don't need you guys swinging the vote to see someone new in the All-Star game. Moneymakers only. Yeah.
Stephen Lowry writes in, really tired of everyone complaining about the voting being fake. It's a popularity contest, not who's the best. It's all about money and corporate greed. Not even going to get into Russian bias. Anyway, enough with the 2016 election. The whole All-Star thing is whack, too.
Ba-dum-bum.
Wow.
Whoa. Richie Flores, the one thing he misses is putting 11 Chicago Blackhawks on the roster. Hashtag not.
Melania saw the All-Star vote totals and she started crying, but not tears of joy.
I was so out of touch yesterday. I still don't even really understand what happened with
it. There's a book coming out that basically chronicles all the backroom shit with the Trumps and stuff, and it's pretty great. It's basically someone said the book actually draws the comparison we've always made, which is it's the producers. It's like we're going to create a musical that's going to flop, then it winds up being a hit. They're in a room thinking, okay, we're going to lose all these states.
Oh, like they were trying to lose.
Yeah,
them. Of course they were.
They're losing
Trump
all these
was
states.
Never trying to win.
All of a sudden they're the president.
That's what blows my mind that he's still the president. Is like once he won, he should have just been like. just fucking around.
My favorite thing about the stuff that came out yesterday was there was actually a conversation between Ann Coulter and Donald Trump in which Ann Coulter had to say, no, you can't name your son-in-law chief of staff. Like, that's your guardian angel stepping in to make sure you don't make a mess out of things.
She's like, look, I'm a fucking monster, and I got to be the one to tell you this. Like, maybe this isn't the right job for you. Hashtag politics. Any other ones?
Mike Hackstead said, ha ha ha, all the funny ways to say, so now I don't have to be engaged or have the smallest care already taken. That's a very good point. Finally, Matt says, when Scott Darling makes the All-Star team, because they might think he's still a Blackhawk. It's pretty funny. The less said about Scott Darling in the show, the better for you, by the way. People are always bringing up that shit about Darling. And
look, here's what I know right now is that Carolina has more points than Chicago this year. Mm-hmm. And what's changed between those two rosters?
There you go.
Scott Darling.
There it is.
That's not a coincidence.
All right, folks. That is the show for this week. Next week, we will have a guest, we assume. I think, maybe. I forget what the timing is. Oh, next week's Philly show. Right.
What are you doing?
Tickets available at Helium Comedy Club Wednesday, January 10th.
I'm like, you're doing a secret show without me?
Yeah,
at some point
Frank Saravelli will be one of the guests. We might get another who's to say, but Frank's a good guest on his own. Game shows, prizes, everything else. And then after that week, we're going to have a guest too, I think. We're working on it's a pretty cool guest.
Oh, right.
A very specific guest, which would be a real fun time if we get him.
Oh, yeah. I got to email that guy back. Yeah. He should be here that week.
Yeah, if you're a podcasting fan, I think you'll dig it. Anyways. I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. You can find my shit at Wyshynski on Twitter. All my writing at ESPN.com. Just find the NHL tag. My other podcast is ESPN on Ice. We had Linda Cohen and Brian Gianta on this week. And,
oh, Linda Cohen, huh? I remember she used to come on this podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to,
Sure, Linda, whatever.
And that's about it. What's up with you?
I'm going to go pee before we do the mailbag, so.
All right, that's the show. Dave is going to address his bladder issues as he is wont to do. And I am now in a room by myself speaking into a microphone as someone has literally just left the room because he had to make pee-pee. He's had to make pee-pee for a good number. If you felt that Dave's answers were getting shorter and shorter, it may be because he had tiny little spigots of pee dotting his underwear and making a perilous journey to the front of his pants. But now he has left the room in order to remedy this. I will no longer vamp to see if he comes back. I will simply bid you adieu and say, come to the Patreon for the mailbag segment. Thanks, everybody. Have a great new year.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Bug soup.